I only used to just sketch out my designs when I got to like what it looked like visually, but now I pull the Jira ticket up and I start making relationships on my paper between the different things, and it helps really narrow down what the design needs are. I used to just sketch a couple designs and then put it into the screen, but I realized that now my brain thinks way more iteratively. I draw connections between different pieces of the design really fast on paper, where staring at a screen is just like, it's not that friendly to my mind for some reason.
Our guest today brings immense passion for human-centered design and deep expertise crafting experiences that build user trust and allegiance. Prior to her current role, she leveraged her creative passion in vision and vision across both digital and physical mediums, and her analytical eye and commitment to understanding end users have directly fueled increased revenue and engagement for several prominent companies. And along her journey, she's tackled complex design constraints, merged visual inspirations with functional intuition, and always kept the end audience at the heart of the process. Now, as a UX designer at Trender.ai, she's pouring this rare blend of skills into building tools that connect sales teams to prospect data in revolutionary ways. And intuitive design means more bandwidth for customer care, and data-driven intelligence drives faster deal closure. It's a potent combination. So with that said, please join me in welcoming Alyssa Marr to the Same Logic podcast. Alyssa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So you have experience as both apparel / graphic designer early on, as well as a UX designer. How did you leverage your graphic design background when transitioning into UX?
I was a very research and trend heavy graphic designer. I always wanted to know what's popular around. I also studied generational trends. So I would study buyer intent, and it was mostly e-commerce and in the fashion industry, but it's all completely related. So I was able to use that background and research immediately in user experience design via competitive research, but also being a really like outgoing person, I can jump right into user calls and user research. And I've always had a lot of success with that. And it's been so seamless to use those background skills, because not every graphic designer looks at generational trends of Gen Z and Gen Alpha and their habits and what kind of buyers they're going to want to be. And just like over, you know, recording that over 10 years of experience of looking at fashion trends, it really gave me so much breadth to work with.
And what originally sparked your interest in UX design over other types of design?
I was working at a fashion company, and I was not having, I mean, it was like my dream job. I felt like Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City at first, getting my dream job and being in fashion. And then it just wasn't the desired work environment I had sought. It was more like Devil Wears Prada. And I just was seeking alternative route. I had taken a user experience design day course before when I lived in Seattle years prior. And it sounded interesting to me then, but I wasn't ready to give up my dream of being an apparel designer at the time. I still thought I could make it, and I did not make it, but I made some really cool graphics. So as I matured, I thought of UX again, and I was like, I think I'll be good at that now. And I kind of started looking into it. And it was right around that time, I was just like, wow, there's these boot camps. And I know everyone has a lot to say about boot camps, but I really found that such a crucial jump off point for me, because I already had a bachelor's of fine art and graphic design. And I just needed kind of that little stint of a education to help me pivot into a new direction in design.
And how has your design approach evolved over the years, you'd say, compared to your early roles and compared to now?
I guess it's similar to graphic design in a way, is that starting from a blank page is terrifying. And so I'm always collecting inspiration. Like when I was an apparel designer, I'm looking at the hot trends. I'm was looking at, what is London and Paris doing? But in user experience design, it's like, hey, what are the other apps our users in? What do they use every day? What design patterns are they used to seeing? And how can we insert those types of design patterns into our app to make it seem like it's just an extension of another app they already know how to use? So that's what I've been doing at Trender, and it's been working out really well. I think sometimes not every design pattern fits well, but for the most part, it's a lot of our users are using HubSpot because they're sales professionals, and that might be their main CRM. So taking kind of design patterns that HubSpot is using and putting those to Trender, I think that's one of the things as a user experience designer, at a startup that you really have to do. You gotta be scrappy. And that's one of the fastest ways to be scrappy in a small startup is to take inspiration from other companies where the user is there and using that product and loves it. So I want them to love ours too. I want them to feel comfortable in our product. So I do that a lot.
This dovetails right into my next question. So Trender.ai focuses on contact intelligence for sales teams, right? How was your first time designing for that user group? What things did you learn? Walk us through like your first time designing for that user group.
Funny story actually is that we started as a marketing app and we started as a social listening tool. So I was actually getting to learn about the day-to-day life of marketing managers and social media experts. That's when I originally started tr at Trender. Through the course of time, trying to find product market fit and really be competitive in the industry, we have pivoted over to a sales app. So I got to learn a whole new customer base. And it takes time. I definitely felt like I had just started really understanding our user before we pivoted. And then we pivoted. And it's interesting because sales professionals have pretty outdated prospecting tools that they do, like a lot of cold calling. And a lot of things like Googling their prospects takes a lot of time, and that information is in a lot of different places. They haven't really updated their tooling in a long time, I feel like, a lot of the teams. And I think that we have a really compelling product for them, but it can be kind of hard to figure out how best to cater to their needs because the sales process seems so ingrained. And it's like, how do we disrupt that? And how do we get in there and show them how much we can innovate on those processes? And it feels like it's been sort of a challenge, but we're definitely turning a corner on designing tools that are really compelling stories for them. It's been great. I mean, it's definitely challenging at times, but I approach any project the same way. I pull requirements, I discuss it with my manager, who's the VP of product, and we just kind of brainstorm about the best route to go and talk back and forth. And I do my research and sketching and storyboarding. It has been really helpful to get the project moving fast. But yeah, we're just trying to do our best at the end of the day to help users do their jobs quicker and more successfully and lower the bandwidth that they're spending in all these other apps and help them really focus on having a good relationship with their prospects.
And what assumptions did you initially have about sales teams before like pivoting into this industry that has have changed after learning more designing for that user group?
I don't know if I've had that much change, I guess, like learning what tools they're in day to day. I think I didn't really realize how much pressure they were under to meet their quotas. If they underperform a couple months, they can really get fired or let go, and that they are under just such extreme pressure all the time. So I think designing for a user that we know is under extreme pressure is like definitely a different animal. Just like they're trying to work as fast and as efficiently as possible. And I haven't worked on a product like that before. So It was definitely a learning curve, and still some days, I look at a user flow and I'm like, nah, that's way too many steps. Let's see how I can slim that down. So I guess that's one of the ways you just like you start kind of with a wide net of a lot of designs and a lot of ideas and more steps. And then you're like, all right, how can I simplify all this down to the littlest choice possible? And that's kind of what we have done.
And what research methodologies did you leverage for understanding sales teams and their needs and their pain points? You don't have to go through in extreme detail. We can stay like high level if you want, because it may involve, I don't know, some proprietary knowledge. Just like walk us through like that process.
A way that we get research and understand our users is through sales demo calls, and those are led by my manager, the VP of product, and she records the demo calls, so I get to watch them, and we glean insights from those. The sales team, like, we're just such a small team. We're only, I think, six people, so the bandwidth for the user experience designer to go do user testing with and use, and user research is just like, there's not the time of day to do that because I need to focus on the product 24/7. So yeah, it's like definitely sometimes hard to not be able to do one-on-one with the actual users, but we get a lot of insights from our customers and from our design partners, and they help us figure out some of the things we can do better and some of the nice to haves. And then the VPs go through sometimes with members of the board, or I don't exactly know how all the executives figure out the roadmap, but they have to constantly figure out if they want to do like updates to some of the tools we already have in the app, or if they want to do a new feature. And so like it's always a risk either way. We just have such a small team, so we need to be ultra focused on small things.
And you seem to enjoy hand sketching before digitizing. What does that allow you to explore that digitally you can't do initially?
Yeah, I only used to just sketch out my designs when I got to like what it looked like visually, but now I pull the Jira ticket up and I start making relationships on my paper between the different things, and it helps really narrow down what the design needs are, because I have to work very quickly to meet tight deadlines, especially right now as we're having some more bigger releases come out. So I used to just sketch a couple designs and then put it into the screen, but I realized that now my brain thinks way more iteratively and more. I draw connections between different pieces of the design really fast on paper, where staring at a screen is just like, it's not that friendly to my mind for some reason. And then I don't want to get too much eye fatigue. I got glasses recently from all the eye fatigue from screens. So I think that's one of the things that's really been like an add for me as UX designer, is having the flexibility as a design team of one to just do whatever process works for me mentally has been really freeing. So I just start sketching and writing down some of the pieces of the puzzle, and then I end up drawing circles and connecting and underlining, and it becomes kind of funny map, like a systems map. And then I get into sketching, and I love storyboards. Those are really good. I do that all the time because it's really easy and fast to relay what a prototype would do, except it's a storyboard. But yeah, my boss said that she doesn't really care if I have a gnarly sketch. It could even be on a napkin if it's like the design, because she likes it that way. She doesn't want me to waste time.
What are the most important design constraints or priorities when designing specifically for sales users?
I'm not sure, but with an AI sales project, it's really crucial to be able to share a lot of the process of what's going on in the background, or what processes we're doing. So we do end up having to do a lot of hand holding in the product. It's also like It's an industry disruptor product, which I always wanted to work on when I started being a UX designer, just to one of those innovative products that comes in and can completely change how someone works and really like reinvent a process that's outdated. So I love that about Trendor. But I think like we learned kind of early on that we need to say almost more than we thought we needed to say when we're doing different processes, or like we have a lot of like modals that will come up on the screen that a user can check a box and be like, don't show me this again. And then they don't have to see that again, but we just have to tell them a lot of things a lot of times.
Also, like when it comes on to staying on top of industry trends, what are some of the places that you go to stay in, on top of what's happening in the industry?
I get a lot of newsletters from different UX design resources. I look at like NN Group, which is like one of the founders of user experience design. But I'm always following different things on LinkedIn or on social media channels and in Twitter, just kind of seeing what's happening in the industry. There's often trend reports, and I read all of those. You get the AI one, the UX one, the like every e-commerce trend. And I just read them all because there's obviously going to be a lot in there that doesn't apply to me. But there's always going to be something that stands out that is going to be enjoyable, and it keeps me on my toes. I really like researching, and I listen to podcasts. I've listened to some of yours, and yeah, I love hearing about how different people are working or processing things. I mentor and I get mentored on ADP List. So that's been really nice. It feels very mutual sometimes, even it doesn't matter if I'm the mentor or the mentee in a situation. I'm always learning more things about myself and about the industry as a whole. So I like staying up to date on that. And then for a lot of inspiration and research, I look at YouTube. That's kind of my go-to. I really like watching things in video form. It just gives me kind of a mental break, you know? So there's some really great content out there.
Awesome. This is my last question here. I ask everyone who comes onto the podcast this question, and it is, what's one weakness that you've turned into your strength?
I think the weakness I turned into a strength was being able to pivot off of a project really quickly. Working at a startup, there are so many different, we learn fast and we iterate, and sometimes we learn really fast, and then it's like, oh, wait, the scope is down. Oh, now it's up. And we've got to just be able to be really flexible and kind of turn the corner really fast. So it's really helped my leadership skills. And I'm like, oh, well, this is not going to make the cut for this feature, or I have concerns about this part. And really going in with a really strategic mindset and looking at the big picture, pulling out all the parts and assessing everything that needs to be done. It's often that I'll get certain JIRA tickets and not all the requirements are able to be drawn yet, because it's like you learn by doing some of the tasks, like some of the problem solving. And when I problem solve further, I'll be like, oh, wow, this cannot be done until we do this. And everything's so connected within that. So it's like, within the organization, since I'm the only product designer, it's been really beneficial for me. And then I can really step up my game and give what I propose as solutions and give what I propose as where the scope should go and what I think can be done or what I think needs a rethink. So that is something that's always been helpful. And then the other part of that is, you know, if I'm using the app and I'm able to point out different slight fit and polish defects or different things that I just think aren't a pleasant experience or could be better enhanced, I'm able to report those as defects and then get those changed. Because one of the things I've learned in my career is that all the fit and polish of a design, that is really extremely valuable to users. they might not notice it. I can always notice because I have a visual design background. So I can always notice if something's just a little bit off, but user may not be able to notice. And the thing is, like how Dieter Rams said, good design is invisible. I really think that because it's like you don't know, you don't feel like it's bad. If you're like looking at a design, you can't tell and it's seamless. That's because we're doing all the fit and polish in there and really showing that. But if you can notice that something's misaligned weird and it's wonky, then you're noticing the design. You shouldn't be able to notice it. So I really always liked that quote.
I love that. So, Alyssa, thank you so much for joining us on the Same Logic podcast today. Where can our listeners find you if they'd love to connect?
I'm on LinkedIn. I think that's the easiest way to connect with me. So, Alyssa Marr on LinkedIn.
Awesome. And thanks for listening to the Same Logic podcast. To stay in touch, please follow us on LinkedIn or the podcast app you're listening to this on right now for more episodes. I'm Dwayne Samuels. Take care.